Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Arwig and Corey LaBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Arwig and Corey LaBounty with you on this Monday night, just like every single Monday night, following the Paul Finebaum Show, which runs from 2 to 6 right here on this here station, FM Talk 106.5. Another great weekend of college football and NFL football, and it'll be capped off tonight with the New England Patriots trying to keep their undefeated season alive versus the New York Jets, who now have Mr. Mono back at quarterback, Sam Darnold. And they look like a completely different team when he's out there at quarterback. But we'll get into this week in the SEC and some big top 25 upsets, and also talk a little bit about the NFL as the New Orleans Saints continue to roll along without the franchise behind center. Drew Brees getting closer to being back on the field, but in his stead, Teddy Bridgewater's done an amazing job. They're now 5-0 with Bridgewater at quarterback. We'll get all into that later. First off, this weekend, I had a great weekend. Went up to Nashville. My brother is in town. He left his Air Force base there in Southern Texas to hang out with the family for a week and a half. So, Corey, we drove up to Nashville on Friday, watched Ohio State Northwestern Friday night, then caught some college football during the day Saturday, but actually got to go to an NHL game. And the Nashville Predators playing the Florida Panthers on Saturday night. Went to shootout. The Predators did lose the game, but it was a really fun one. Then Sunday, watched some NFL, the noon games, and the Titans kicked off against the Chargers in the afternoon and won one of the most fun games I've been to there in Nashville. The Titans coming away with just an amazing win and a goal line stand, and drove back today. So here, I'm ready to roll, ready to party.
Dalton's ready to rock and roll, and again, it doesn't get any bigger and better for Dalton Arwig when he gets an opportunity to hit the road and spend some quality time with his family. Catch some football as well as some hockey. And I tell you what, Dalton, it was a very busy week of sports. You look at, we have the World Series coming up. You have the NBA season about to start. So just so much going on. College football, NFL football, my favorite time of the year.
Now let's get to some of these headlines, some of the stuff that you may have missed over the weekend. Some more news always comes out on Monday, updating injuries and things of that nature. And the big injury that everyone's talking about and worried about, how long Tua Tagovailoa will be out after suffering that high ankle sprain on Saturday in that win against Tennessee. The same kind of injury that he suffered last season. Thankfully for Tua and for Bama fans, this one happened on the opposite foot. Last year he hurt his left ankle. On Saturday he hurt his right ankle. Saban yesterday saying that Tagovailoa suffered high ankle sprain against Tennessee. They did that tightrope procedure, which we heard about last year, and he said he will miss Arkansas. Thankfully, Bama has a bye the following week, but then they've got LSU coming up after that. It's huge. They need Tua ready for that LSU game. And if you remember last year when he hurt his ankle, they had basically a full month before that Orange Bowl game, and even then he was like a game-time decision going into that game. So we'll see whether Tua will be ready to roll come LSU.
Well, I'll tell you this. 1 year ago, you had a guy named Jalen Hurts that you knew could come in and was a productive leader for the Crimson Tide. Mac Jones looked great in the A-Day game as far as competing with Tua Tagovailoa, but I'm concerned. 6 out of 11 for 72 yards was Mac Jones, and again, you have four future NFL wide receivers to throw to, and an NFL running back in Najee Harris as well. So offensively, it's not like he cannot or does not have the playmakers or is limited to what he can do. So that's the great thing. He just has to come out, play with a lot of confidence. I think you could see early on that the pressure was on him.
Yeah, we'll get into depth in that Alabama-Tennessee game from Saturday night, and also preview Alabama-Arkansas coming up this week. Certainly not a team that you want to lose to, the Arkansas Razorbacks. And probably not much worry of that in Tuscaloosa right now. You mentioned the World Series. It gets started tomorrow night. Of course, that's because the Houston Astros beat the New York Yankees on Saturday night, Game 6, and the little man, Jose Altuve, all 5'6" of him, hit a 405-foot bomb off of Aroldis Chapman there in the bottom of the ninth inning. Astros win 6-4, their second American League pennant in the last 3 years. And because of that home run and a couple others that he hit during the series, Altuve was named the ALCS MVP. And game one set to begin tomorrow night. Washington heading to Houston for games one and two. And listen to this. The sports books opened the Astros as -235 favorites to win the series. That's the largest that a team has been favored entering the World Series since 2007, back when the Boston Red Sox were -240 to beat the Colorado Rockies. And with that huge line there for the series, of course, Houston's favored to win game one tomorrow night, -190. You'll probably have Max Scherzer on the mound for Washington and Garrett Cole on the mound for Houston. And Cole has been the best pitcher in the major league. So we should see another great pitcher's duel tomorrow night.
I'm looking forward to it, Dalton. The World Series at its best. You're looking at the hottest team in baseball, the Nationals. You're looking at one point in the season. They were debating on whether to break this team up and make a lot of trades, but now they've won six in a row, sweeping the Cardinals, taking the last two of the series from the Dodgers. So what a great and outstanding World Series we'll have.
And you have that Mattress Mack, I think was his name, out of Texas, who put, I think he ended up putting $10 million down on the Astros, maybe $7 million down on the Astros to win the World Series, getting $10 million back in return. So you know he's going to be nervous coming up during this series that starts tomorrow night. In NASCAR, they're in the playoffs too. Denny Hamlin got the win yesterday at Kansas Speedway. Had to go to double overtime because they kept having wrecks. I know Bubba Wallace ended up blowing a tire, and the tire, I think, passed his car on the straightaway. But Hamlin ended up beating Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch in that second overtime. It was Hamlin's fifth win of the season, his second win at Kansas Speedway. You had Kurt Busch fourth, William Byron fifth. And because that was an elimination race, we saw four drivers eliminated from the playoffs. Brad Keselowski, William Byron, Alex Bowman, and Clint Bowyer, they're all out. That leaves Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., Denny Hamlin, Logano, Kevin Harvick, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, and Ryan Blaney all left there in the round of eight. You mentioned basketball getting started tomorrow night, and the New Orleans Pelicans will start against the defending champion Toronto Raptors. I know everyone was hoping that the number one pick, Zion Williamson, would be ready to roll for that game. It had the makings of a huge night in front of the national media and national audience. Unfortunately, today, Pelicans announced that Zion had arthroscopic surgery on his right knee, had to repair a torn meniscus. He's now expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks, which would be about 20 games of the 82-game schedule if he only misses 8 weeks. Huge loss for the New Orleans Pelicans.
I mean, you look at Zion, that was the biggest thing for me, was his durability. Would he be able to handle the pressures and the rigors of the NBA schedule? And with him being a rookie out 6 to 8 weeks now, he's only the fourth number one draft pick in the last 25 years. Not to start in game number one of the regular season, but again, he sold a lot of tickets, a lot of disappointed fans, but you want him to be healthy, and it hurts the Pelicans' chances without question. But Zion Williamson, hopefully he returns as quickly as possible. At least it's not an ACL tear.
And with this news, two things are coming out from complainers out there on the web, saying first that New Orleans shouldn't have had all these primetime games to begin with. I think they're scheduled for 20 primetime games this year. And the second thing, people comparing Zion already to Greg Oden, the Ohio State big man who went on to did he start in Portland? I know he played for Portland for a time, but he didn't play much for anybody in the NBA, just consistently had injuries. With Zion, I think it's a bit different. Greg Oden was, what, 7 foot, 7 foot one? Didn't seem to have the drive that you see with Zion. When you saw Williamson line up for those team pictures, he's only about 6'6", but he's probably 240, 250, a big guy who knows how to use his body. That's going to be a huge loss for New Orleans. And then to wrap up these headlines today, we saw the Clemson Tigers, they won against Louisville. It was kind of dicey there in the first half. Trevor Lawrence threw two more picks, which puts him up to 8 interceptions this year. But we also saw in that game a little bit of a tussle, and the cornerback there for Clemson, Andrew Booth, ended up being ejected after rolling around on the ground with one of the Louisville players, and then he throws a punch into the Louisville player's helmet, which that, to me, is the dumbest thing you can do on a football field, is punch a helmet. I know you get wrapped up in the game and you get heated, but punching a helmet, one of the top five dumb moves in sports, because you're not going to cause any damage to anybody but your own hand. I don't see what he was trying to do there. And that wasn't the only damage that he had. He first, Dabo threw him off the field before the official ejection came. And then Dabo wasn't done with it. He makes him ride the equipment manager's bus all the way back to Clemson while the rest of the team, I guess, flew back to Clemson. So Andrew Booth had that long ride back from Louisville to Clemson. He was a five-star recruit. He is a freshman, so I'm sure he'll stick around on the team. He won't be tossed because of that, but Dabo kind of trying to send a message there with the young cornerback.
And I think, you know, Dabo, he's in control of his team, and that's what's important. And I think that's the right thing for this young man to have had done. I mean, you look at the repercussions behind it. It's putting yourself over the team, and there is no I over we in the game of football, especially in a national championship contender in Clemson. So he sent a message to the rest of his team that what is acceptable, what is not acceptable. So I agree with that, and I think he had plenty of time on that bus ride, over 450 miles as a matter of fact, to think about his actions.
Well, Clemson, they were only up 17-3. Yeah, what's up?
At least he did not get the flag for the dance-off. I mean, we had a couple of teams, Coastal Carolina and Georgia Southern, that got flagged for dancing against one another. So he earned his penalty. Georgia Southern and Coastal Carolina did not.
Well, Clemson ended up winning that game but dropped in the polls. We'll talk about the AP Top 25 when we get back and also take a look into some of those games, including the Alabama Crimson Tide and Tennessee Vols. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. I'm Dalton Orwig. Corey LeBounty sitting across from me. You can find us both on Twitter. I'm at Dalton Orwig. Hard to find there. That's DalTonOrwig. And Corey, where can people find you?
At C.A. LeBounty, LaBounty. That's at C.A. LeBounty on Twitter.
And you can call or text the show. Same number for both, 343-0106. And also catch the podcast following the show at www.fmtalk1065.com. Chester texting in. We were talking about how stupid it is to throw a punch into a helmet during a game. He says, also taking your helmet off in a fight in the top five. And he's right about that. I remember I was in I wasn't in the scrap necessarily, but a high school game back when Faith Academy was still playing in the AISA, and I was at a small school in Grove Hill, Alabama called Clark Prep, and we were playing in a playoff game. And the end of the game got pretty heated, and both teams kind of met in the middle of the field there. Some punches were thrown, shoves were going around, and everybody on my sideline taking their helmets off. And I was doing the opposite because I was on the sideline when it started, so I'm putting the helmet on, doing the opposite of everyone else. But Chester's right there. Don't take your helmet off in a fight on the football field, and don't throw a punch into a helmet. A couple of the stupidest things you could possibly do. All right, let's talk about some college football, and we keep seeing some big favorites fall by the wayside. It's not all happening in one week. This year it's kind of been happening here and there a little bit at a time, but there's certainly been some movement in the top 10 this week. Alabama, they remain at number one after beating Tennessee 35-13. We mentioned it earlier. Tua, he's going to miss next week's game against Arkansas. Thankfully for Bama fans, they have the bye week after that before playing LSU. And if things stay the way they are, LSU currently ranked number two after beating Mississippi State 36-13. So we should have a number one versus number two matchup coming up in 2 weeks.
The second biggest game of the century between Alabama and LSU. We talked last week on the show, the 2011 game that wound up being the 9-6 defensive game that a lot of people want to forget about. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think there'll be a little bit more offense in this year's game. And one versus two, it's a 2:30 kickoff, not the primetime kickoff as announced by CBS today. So you have to look forward to that 2:30 CBS broadcast, possibly, like you mentioned, one versus two.
And where's that? Is that game at LSU or where are they
playing?
In
Tuscaloosa.
In Tuscaloosa. Okay, so Alabama will get the home field advantage there, but if they don't have Tua in the lineup, that'll be a big, big loss. Clemson, they keep on falling down the rankings one spot at a time. This week, Ohio State jumped the Tigers for the number three spot. That comes after the Buckeyes absolutely crushed Northwestern Friday night, 52-3. That means that Clemson's now at number four. They started slow against Louisville, and Trevor Lawrence threw those two interceptions. He now leads, believe it or not, the ACC in interceptions thrown.
He's thrown eight this year. I don't think anyone saw that coming into the year when he was a heavy Heisman favorite.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that offensively, Clemson has not hit on all strides yet. I mean, you're looking at what they returned at the quarterback slash receiver position, and that was going to be one of the strengths, the balance of this offensive team. And the offensive line of Clemson has not protected Trevor Lawrence the way that they need to. And because of that, he's kind of forced some issues and made some throws that he normally did not make 1 year ago.
Oklahoma, they stayed steady at number five. Jalen Hurts had another ho-hum five-touchdown day in a 52-14 win over West Virginia. Penn State comes in at number six. They got that win over Michigan, followed by Florida at number seven, Notre Dame at number eight, Auburn rising one spot to number nine, actually two spots to number nine, and then you have Georgia at number 10, which means all five of the SEC's top 10 ranked teams, those are the only SEC teams in the entire top 25 because Missouri lost to Vanderbilt. I couldn't believe it when I was watching it in a bar in Nashville next to Missouri fans. Now, this game was in Nashville, and there were plenty of Missouri fans walking around town, but a few of them decided to hit Broadway instead of going to the game. I think they probably thought that they had it in the bag, and that wasn't so. Vanderbilt ends up winning their biggest and pretty their only SEC win of the year, but they pull off the upset against Missouri.
Redemption for the Vanderbilt Commodores. Anchor down. I know my mom's thrilled about that huge win by Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt losing 1 week ago to UNLV and then turn around and having this shocking and huge win against Missouri, definitely one the Commodores needed.
Amazing. Let's talk about that Bama-Tennessee game a little bit. Score ended up being 35-13, but it was much, much closer than that for a majority of the game. 13 years in a row now that Alabama has beat Tennessee. That's pretty crazy stat in itself. Tua, he wasn't on the field very long, but when he was fairly efficient, even though he didn't get into the end zone. 11 of 12, 155 yards, and one interception, which was thrown there in the end zone. And was it Ruggs or Waddle that chased
it
Nigel
was
Warrior
Ruggs
down?
Ruggs from got the back him. Of the end zone that actually made the tackle.
And if you watch that replay, he was scooting. And
he was smoking.
If he didn't get him, Waddle was going to get him.
Oh, Waddle was right there. But, I mean, you look at Ruggs. He started off in a jog when the interception was thrown. And then all of a sudden, from the 20-yard line to where he made the tackle, he just put it in another gear. And he shows why he is the fastest member of this Crimson Tide football team.
And right now, the most disconcerting thing for Alabama fans is after Tua left with that high ankle sprain, the offense only puts up 7 points the rest of the game.
Defensively, I mean, that was a huge goal line stand by the defense and one that was instrumental in them having that padded cushion that they needed. And it's a situation to where when you look at the box score, ultimately, you see Mac Jones again being 6 out of 11 for 72 yards. And Tua was 11 out of 12 before he exited the game through that one bad throw that he should not have thrown at all. But other than that, with him only having his second interception in a row, that's two identical interceptions for Tua in the Texas A&M game and in the Tennessee game right in the end zone to where he forced the football. But do you have reason for concern if you're an Alabama fan? Absolutely you do, because you don't go from a Heisman Trophy winner or possibly the leading candidate for the Heisman Trophy to having a backup like Mac Jones. Not to knock Mac Jones, but at the same time, the offensive weapons that he has around him I think are going to benefit him tremendously. You'll see a lot more confidence against this Arkansas team, a team that gave up 50-plus points to Auburn this past week.
And also what will help him is getting to game plan the entire week for Mac Jones at quarterback. Of course, they're going to run a bit of a different offense than they do when Tua is in there getting the starter reps all week. But what are you seeing from Mac Jones? You got to keep a closer eye on the game this weekend than I did. What's his hang up right now? Is he nervous back there dancing around, or what are you seeing from him?
Without question, he just came in nervous. And I think it took his teammates around him, Brian Robinson included, the running back for the University of Alabama, to say, hey, we got your back. Just settle in, do what we see you do all the time in practice. Because when you go back and you look at the 8A game and the performance that he's had in the backup role, he's played with a lot of confidence there. And then all of a sudden, to have your name called instantaneously when Tua gets up and walks to the sideline, you don't even think you're going into the game. Coach Saban didn't even know Tua was hurt at the time. So that just goes to show you have to be ready at all times. I think, like you said, having Arkansas, being a 35-point-plus favorite now, the pressure on Mac Jones is going to be just to not to try to do too much. Don't force the ball. You can be a true game manager with the offensive talent that you have around you.
Well, Tennessee had a backup come into the game also. The difference in this was he was the starter to begin the year. The freshman, Brian Maurer, was knocked out. Two concussions in 2 weeks. So Jarrett Garantano came back in and didn't do much. Actually, Maurer had a better passing night than Garantano, even though he got a lot more reps. And the big play everyone's talking about there towards the very end of the game, Tennessee had the chance to make it an 8-point game and got all the way down to the goal line, 4th and 1. And Garantano runs a quarterback sneak, which seems pretty standard down there at that point in the game. But the left guard pulls left, and the left side of the line crashes down. They were trying to run a run to the left side of the field. And if you look at the overhead angle after the game, that was clearly the call. Garantano decides to go do it himself and sneak the ball in. And it wasn't even a true sneak. He tried to jump the pile. We all saw what happened there. Alabama knocks the ball out, and Trevon Diggs takes it 100 yards for the score. But what happened afterwards with Jeremy Pruitt kind of snatching Garantano's face mask, I know a lot of people are hung up on that for some reason, but to me, that seems like something that Nick Saban would have done back in the early years to light a fire under his team. I don't think, and I might be wrong, but I don't think they're going to put Garantano back out there the rest of this year unless they absolutely have to.
So, you know, Dalton, you know, for grasping the face mask, you have a personal foul, which will cost you 15 yards, and then you have an inadvertent face mask. Well, I think that's a situation to where Coach Pruitt just wanted to make sure that Tennessee's quarterback was making eye contact with him, and he briefly grabbed, he didn't grasp the face mask. He just took a couple of fingers and made sure that he was making eye contact with him and heard what he had to say to get his attention. And I think the young man knew he made a decision that was not in the best interest of his football team. He was going to tuck his tail, hide his head in between his legs, and coach wouldn't let him do that. So he got his attention, and it just, I think in the heat of the moment, I didn't have a problem with it. If he would have grasped it and shook his head, that's something else. But no problem with it for me.
Well, Arkansas has Bama this weekend. Their appetizer for Alabama was the Auburn Tigers, who were coming fresh off a bye after that loss to Florida. And the big question for Auburn was, with Booby Whitlow now out for at least the next month, who's going to kind of step up there on in the backfield. And it was kind of a mixture. Had all four running backs get some good time. Cam Martin, he kind of started the game at running back, led the team with 84 yards on 10 carries. Of course, they mixed in Sean Shivers quite a bit out of the backfield and Malik Miller. And in the second half, though, really interesting, they brought in the freshman running back, DJ Williams, to kind of close the game out. And he had one drive where I think they held onto the ball for 5 or 6 minutes, and he was just plowing along. He ended up leading the team in carries with 11 and gained 48 yards. So that's good news for Auburn Tigers fans with Booby Whitlow out for the foreseeable future.
Bo Nix has found his guy. We knew Seth Williams with 2 touchdowns, had 4 receptions for 90 yards, but again, that's his trigger man. He likes to have that happen. Schwartz being healthy again, 6 receptions for 73 yards. The Auburn Tigers absolutely dominated this football game, and 51-10 winners turned them into bacon bits again.
Yeah, big night for Anthony Schwartz, and a big night for Joe Burrow and the LSU Tigers. We'll talk about the Heisman Top 5 when we get back.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Corey, I do not want to talk about the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge. I keep trying to pull some upsets off, and they're just not happening for me. But you had a good week, right?
I was telling David Preston, this was my second week in a row to where I've come on late. 9 out of 10 last week, 9 out of 10 this past week. So not too bad, 18 out of 20. Bringing up the rear a little bit, but I'm still picking it up a little bit.
Yeah, Tournier won. I think he's still in the lead there. And David Preston hot on his heels, which – that's embarrassing for me that I'm not beating David Preston in college pick'em, but, you know, I'll take my L right now and keep pulling for those upsets to happen week in and week out. An upset that I was really hoping would happen last Wednesday night, the battle for the belt, South Alabama Jaguars heading up to Troy to take on the Trojans. And going into the game, you know, Troy was favored by, I think, 17 points, and I thought that's too much for a rivalry game. They always play a lot closer than that. And I ended up being pretty wrong. Troy wins 37-13, South's 5th loss in a row. which drops their record to 1-6. The good news, South did keep the game close through the first half, even tied it at 10 in the second quarter with Kawan Baker getting into the end zone. Unfortunately, that ended up being the Jags' only touchdown of the game, and Troy pretty much whoops them.
Battle of the Belt means a lot to these two teams and the fan bases, and unfortunately South Alabama was not able to capitalize in the red zone area. Had to settle for a couple of field goals early, and that was the difference, or settle for a field goal early, having an opportunity, I do believe, maybe at first and goal, just weren't able to punch it in for six. And, you know, you look at Troy being able to come away, and now they're 3-3, 1-1 in the conference. South Alabama has to find a way to bounce back against a nationally ranked Appalachian State team that comes in here, and it's going to be nationally televised on ESPN. So ESPNU at 11 o'clock kickoff, another opportunity for South Alabama to compose themselves and beat a top 25 team in America at home.
Appalachian State's just so good. I think they're favored going into this game by, I want to say, 25 points. And you did mention the game is here in Mobile. That's a plus for South. But they've got to figure something out. Going into the year, the odds makers, I guess, had it right because they had them pegged at 2.5 win total, meaning they'd win right around two or three games. I thought that was preposterous when it came out. To me, this looked like an improved team over last season, and the odds makers are proving me wrong here because South just having an awful season. But that Appalachian State offense, they were pretty much able to name their score against Louisiana Monroe this last weekend, won 52-7, now ranked 21st, like you said, and South last place in all of the Sun Belt Conference. But upsets happen all the time. We saw it with Illinois and Wisconsin this week, and South could burst Appalachian State's bubble pretty quickly.
And if it's going to happen, this needs to be the week that it does not, that it does happen for the Jaguars. And it's a situation to where you're going to have an 11 o'clock kickoff. You're at home. You get your fan base behind you. And like you said, I just think this is the shot in the arm that this South Alabama team desperately needs. Now, we know Nebraska in the opening game of the season, Nebraska was a top 25 team in the country. We had an opportunity to go in there and make some noise and gave Nebraska all they could handle on the road. It's a situation that South Alabama has to play up to that level. They can't play the way they did against Memphis or against Troy and expect to win. So I expect this team to learn from their mistakes, to play with a lot of confidence, a lot of motivation at home, and give App State all they can handle.
The good news is they got three extra days than Appalachian State did by playing on Wednesday. A little bit of extra rest and time to kind of scout the other team, but that would be a massive upset if South could somehow pull that off. Let's just say I'm not holding my breath for that, unfortunately. Georgia, they beat Kentucky 21-0 in that monsoon on Saturday. You can thank, what was it, Nestor, the name of that tropical storm that rolled up through there.
Right.
And the run game for Georgia seems to be working fine. I think DeAndre Swift ended up, was it 135 or 165? He rushed for a lot of yards. Jake Fromm, who a lot of people were touting as a potential first-round pick in the NFL draft, continues to, you know, not get it done. He only finished with 35 yards passing. I know he was playing in some bad weather, but Jake Fromm, you could do better than that just by tossing it out of the backfield. And Georgia, they came away with the shutout win thanks to good defense and thanks to good running, but that's not going to get it done from Jake Fromm in some of these bigger games coming up.
And I will say 9 out of 12 for 35 yards, because of the rain, it was a situation to where you're going to give the ball to Swift. He did have 21 carries for 179 yards. And you look at Kentucky, Kentucky was only 2 out of 15 passing the ball. So it was not a great environment to throw the football in between the hedges. But it was a great win for Georgia, finding a way to bounce back. And again, I said if they were going to lose, you want to lose early. And they have lost early, and they're having a chance to redeem themselves here in weeks to come.
Joe Burrow, he had another good night for LSU against Mississippi State. Tigers won 36-13, and I guess he had a good night. He did get pantsed at one point in the game.
What do you mean by pants, Dalton? let the folks know who did not have an opportunity to see or hear about what happened to Joe Burrow.
I mean, he was getting sacked. I think it was in the third quarter that Mississippi State, one of the Bulldogs rushers, got to him, and the only part he got was his belt loop, and ends up, you know, use what you got. You don't want him to let go just because he's about to pants the guy. But what was funny, after the game, Joe Burrow said, I heard there was supposed to be a full moon in Starkville tonight. He's got – not only is he showing that he's got the skill to be – which he's already showing he's a really good quarterback – but he's quickly working his way up the draft board. I would not be surprised with Tua's injury history now at this point and some of the concern the teams might, I don't carry the same concern, but some teams might carry the concern that Tua might be, you know, lights out in college, but that game might not translate to the NFL. Joe Burrow is kind of showing what traditional NFL quarterbacks show, and that's being able to just drop back and throw the ball. He had another great night. Of course, it helps when you have receivers like Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase catching the ball. They had a couple good nights. But that was enough with Tua's injury and Joe Burrow continuing to show out. He is now the favorite to win the Heisman at sportsbooks. He's up to plus 170, averaging 355 yards per game, 79.4% completion percentage. That's insane to me. And he's got 29 touchdowns with only three interceptions. Those 29 touchdowns already enough to, I think, tie, or he might have went ahead and broken the LSU single-season record for touchdown passes.
He did. I think he surpassed DeMarcus Russell on that list, but it's been very impressive. And you mentioned LSU. I mean, it was a 3-0 game at the end of the first quarter. And you said, okay, Coach Moorhead, the head coach at Mississippi State, it's an opportunity for the fans to go wild in Stark Vegas and have a chance to storm the field, as there's been rumblings that he may take the Rutgers job.
Yeah.
So it's a situation to where LSU definitely dominated the second, third, and fourth quarters and went ahead and pulled away.
Let's go through the Heisman top five. I mentioned that Joe Burrow is now the favorite. Right behind him, Jalen Hurts, who had another great night. They beat West Virginia 52-14. Neil Brown, the former Troy coach, now there at West Virginia, and had to do a pretty big rebuild, and they're in year one of that. So I think Neil Brown will succeed eventually, but not this year and not against a team like Oklahoma. So Jalen Hurts goes out, throws three touchdown passes, two on the ground. This year right now he's got over 2,000 yards passing, 20 touchdowns, three interceptions, and then when running the ball, 705 yards rushing and 10 touchdowns. He continues to get it done week in and week out.
All right, with Tua Tagovailoa being injured, Dalt, here are my top five Heisman guys. I'm going to go Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. I mean, his LSU offense is averaging 50 points a game. The last time LSU, they've gone a season almost not scoring 50 points offensively. That's the type of struggles that LSU's offense have had. You look at Jalen Hurts, again, his numbers are spectacular. You look at Tua, because he's going to miss just 1 week of action for sure, and Alabama having that bye, that's a couple of weeks that he's going to fall behind numbers-wise. I think Justin Fields is doing an outstanding job at Ohio State. You look at their dominant performance and the dominant performance week in and week out that Ohio State has had. He has 1,492 passing yards with 22 touchdowns, only one interception, but he's rushed the ball 291 yards for eight touchdowns. And then Jonathan Taylor, even though the Wisconsin Badgers, they took a loss on the road to Illinois.
30-point favorites.
And that was amazing in and of itself. But Jonathan Taylor, again, has 15 rushing touchdowns for almost 1,000 yards. He's still a factor to me in this Heisman Trophy race. I don't think he'll win it because Wisconsin could not afford for him to lose, but two top five picks right there, I think all of them have an opportunity to make some money on the next level.
Yeah, that's my same top five. I think it's a four-man race at this point with that loss. And I think Taylor could be there in the final three just to throw a running back in the mix, but he would have needed an undefeated season, I think, from Wisconsin to keep that top spot. And I actually think that this week off for Tua could end up helping him in the long run. If he's able to come back healthy or near healthy and win that game against LSU, if Mac Jones is as inefficient as he was against Tennessee this weekend against Arkansas, that will show voters that Tua isn't getting those numbers just because he's playing on a stacked team with four future NFL wide receivers. If Mac Jones can't get anything going, people might look back and say, well, maybe this is all Tua. Maybe he is the engine that drives this team.
He is the engine that drives the team with those prolific wide receivers that he does have. And like I say, that's the bonus that Mac Jones has. But going back, you're going to see what Jonathan Taylor is made of this next week, because Ohio State is who Wisconsin is going to play. And Ohio State's only giving up 8 points per game. You look at what they're allowing from a rushing yard standpoint, they're only allowing 92.7 yards per game. And if Taylor's able to bust a big win and able to have 150 plus yards against Ohio State, I think he becomes right back into the contention and bumps himself back up again.
And we've seen that Wisconsin defense play with some spark They were one of the top defenses in the league until this last week against Illinois. The toughest defense to this point for Ohio State has been Michigan State, and Michigan State wasn't able to slow them down. It'll be an interesting matchup with that Wisconsin defense. Coming off that awful loss, they'll need to regain their focus. But if they have a big game against Ohio State and Taylor's able to get loose, who knows what could happen.
And I'm going to go back to where you're looking at a couple contenders. Joe Burrow, LSU, taking on the Auburn Tigers. You're looking at Auburn, again, scoring 36 points per game and giving up 17. So we're going to see what Joe Burrow is able to do. If he's able to pick this defensive line and secondary apart for the Auburn Tigers, he easily sustains himself going into back-to-back games with Auburn and Alabama. If he's able to come out of both of those with wins, easily he'll be a favorite.
Yeah, let's talk about that game and a couple more when we get back and get into the NFL a little bit. But how about Trevor Lawrence? 95-1 odds now to win the Heisman. Same odds as Bo Nix. What a fall. He was the favorite going into the year, and he's now tied with Bo Nix in the Heisman odds. College football, it's crazy. You never know what's going to happen. We're coming back. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5.
Sports Talk to start your week. You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Wrapping up another week of FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty with you on this Monday night. Kickoff for New England and the New York Jets going down in just about 10, 15 minutes. And another big day for the NFL yesterday and more injuries to report on. This one coming actually from Thursday night with Kansas City playing Denver. And that was a much closer game initially than people probably thought they'd see. Kansas City ended up pulling away, but the big loss for the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes sneaking the ball on fourth and goal, ends up a freak injury. That usually doesn't happen on quarterback sneaks, but he hurts his knee, dislocates the kneecap. What an awful, awful injury. And there were reports that if he tore any ligaments, he'd be out for possibly the whole year. Good news was the MRI turned out to not show anything too bad. And even people asking if Mahomes might be ready to go this weekend when they play the Green Bay Packers there at home at Arrowhead Stadium. Andy Reid came out and said it would be a stretch for Mahomes to be ready this weekend. So they are going to go ahead and get the backup, Matt Moore, ready to go against Green Bay. But if Mahomes is out for an extended period of time, the Chiefs have already lost a couple games. They could be staring at a race for the playoffs at the end of the year instead of resting their players in those last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you hate to see that because, again, you had a great Sunday night showdown getting ready to come up between Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes, a dueling quarterback, an old veteran quarterback versus Mahomes, the new and emerging star of the NFL. And you're just glad that there was no severe injury that could keep him out for the rest of the season, and there's the potential for him to come back. Don't want to see him rush it to come back because he's been banged up this entire season.
I know the Chiefs are hoping that Matt Moore can string together some performances like Teddy Bridgewater has over the last 5 weeks. And once Drew Brees injured that thumb a few weeks back against the L.A. Rams, actually it was 6 weeks back against the L.A. Rams, and the Saints end up losing that game as Bridgewater comes on in relief. Since then, though, 5-0, and went to Chicago yesterday as 3-point underdogs, end up winning that game 36-25 without Brees and without Alvin Kamara, who's dealing with some knee and ankle injuries himself. So you had Latavius Murray, the former Minnesota Vikings running back, come in and play in relief of Kamara. But Teddy Bridgewater, just he's getting it done. They're 5-0 now, 6-1 as a team this season. And Breeze getting ready to return. They said he's going to return to practice this week and hopes to be able to play as early as this Sunday against Arizona. But if I'm Sean Payton in the New Orleans head office, front office, why put Breeze in there? You got a bye coming up the week after. Let him get these 2 extra weeks and let Bridgewater continue to do what he's been doing, thanks in large part to that New Orleans Saints defense. This run by the Saints shows to me that they could be, they're definitely in talks to be one of the top teams in the NFL. But doing all this without Breeze, to me, that says that with this defense, they could win the Super Bowl this year, no problem.
Teddy Bridgewater has shown what perseverance would mean. You know, you go down with probably what you thought was a career-ending injury, and he's able to bounce back. And credit the Saints. They were really the only team that really thought that he was worth the amount of money that they were going to pay him as a backup. And it just goes to show you that in any given time, you need to be ready. Bridgewater has definitely gotten the confidence of his team. New Orleans defense has backed him up as well, only giving up 17 rushing yards to the Bears.
Atlanta, they've got a different problem than New Orleans right now. 1-6 now after losing to the L.A. Rams. They got beat 37-10. That Falcons defense can't stop anyone, which is a problem because their head coach Dan Quinn is supposed to be a defensive guru. They brought him in after he was the defensive coordinator in Seattle for all those Legion of Boom years, and Dan Quinn has not been able to get it done. The offense has been able to score up until this last weekend, and now Matt Ryan out. He won't practice to start the week. He has a right ankle sprain. Might not be ready for this Sunday against Seattle, but I don't even know why you'd put him out there at this point. They're 1-6. Season seems to be lost, and Dan Quinn now, rumor is he could be let go after this Seattle game if they don't show up any better.
Julio Jones, 6 receptions for 93 yards. You're also looking at Calvin Ridley, 4 receptions for 30 yards. And I know you mentioned Matt Ryan going down after 27 attempts, but Matt Schaub, 6-6 coming back. So maybe he'll give the Atlanta that spark that they need.
How crazy is the NFL? You've got Matt Moore and Matt Schaub potentially starting this weekend in NFL games after it seemed like both of their careers had ended a long time ago. A couple other games I want to get to really quickly. I was at that Tennessee game against the LA Chargers, just an insane ending with the Chargers getting down to the goal line, and looked like they scored 2 or 3 times. Those were all reviewed and put back on the 1 yard line, and then at the very last play of the game with 7 seconds to go, Jeffrey Simmons, rookie defensive lineman. He was taken, I think, with the 20th overall pick by the Titans in the first round. He tore his ACL just in January. We're talking, actually, I think it might have been in March, 8 months of rehab. He gets 3 practices this week, gets out there on the field for his first game, and was absolutely outstanding. He had 2 tackles for losses. He got a sack of Phillip Rivers, and on that very final play, he completely stoned the guard that he was lined up against. That caused Melvin Gordon to have to change his direction. Wesley Woodyard, the linebacker, comes in and punches the ball out. Jarrell Casey recovers it, and the Tennessee Titans get a huge win. And the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers has his biggest game under Matt LaFleur, biggest game of the year. And that, Corey, is why Aaron Rodgers this week is my baller of the week. He didn't have Devontae Adams, who's the top receiver on the team, but still ended up throwing for 429 yards and 5 touchdowns. Also ran for another touchdowns as they beat the Raiders 42-24. And just as importantly, started him on my fantasy team. He got 57 points in one game. And actually, that was the first game he's ever had a perfect passer rating of 158.3. If you'd asked me that, I would have lost that bet. But Aaron Rodgers, his first perfect passer rating game in that win against the Oakland Raiders.
My baller of the week, it gets me emotional when I talk about redshirt sophomore, Minnesota placeholder Casey O'Brien, a 4-time bone cancer survivor.
Wow.
Is the holder, was also named the Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week. Again, you're looking at a young man who's a 4-time bone cancer survivor, had an opportunity to be the placeholder for the Minnesota Golden Gophers, and his head coach, P.J. Fleck, and the rest of his teammates were crying, very emotional. This is a scene, if you haven't had an opportunity to hear Casey O'Brien's story, again, just a survivor of cancer, had an opportunity to be the placeholder, and the Big Ten did the right thing by naming him the Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week. He's my baller of the week.
Man, that is a great story. I always love hearing stories like that, and that's outstanding, especially when the team kind of rallies around someone. And to 4-time survivor?
4-time.
Wow.
Since the age of 13, has been battling bone cancer.
Well, we got another big week in the SEC coming up. Mississippi State and Texas A&M get it started this Saturday in 11 a.m. kickoff at College Station. Aggies favored by 10.5 points. They're 4-3 now after that win at Ole Miss last week, 24-17. And Mississippi State coming off a pretty tough loss there against LSU. They lost pretty big. So that's an 11 a.m. kickoff. The game of the week, though, 2:30. Number nine Auburn and number 2 LSU, the Tigers of LSU, favored by 11.5 points. Who do you think gets it done, Corey?
I got to go with the LSU Tigers. I mean, you're looking at that situation to where it's going to be a very, very tough matchup, but it's in Death Valley. And because it's in Death Valley, that's where I'm going to give the edge to the LSU Tigers. I just think they're playing offensively with a lot of explosiveness, something I haven't seen, something the country has not seen, something that LSU Tiger fans everywhere expected to see a year ago in that matchup against the Crimson Tide in Death Valley. But I'm going to go with the LSU Tigers.
It helps Auburn a little bit, not a lot, that it's a 2:30 kick and not a 6 p.m. kick. They won't be playing under the lights. I think that the defense for both teams shows out this week, and it's a field goal game there at the end, a coin flip game. And I think Auburn could pull it off. But LSU, man, they have been something else this year. At 3 o'clock, South Carolina plays at Tennessee. Gamecocks favored by 4. At 6, number 1 Alabama hosts Arkansas. Homecoming this week. The Tide favored by 32.5 points.
Celebrating the 09 national championship team. Doesn't seem that long ago that Nick Saban won his first national championship as head coach of the Crimson Tide, and going to welcome those guys back to Tuscaloosa.
And to wrap up the SEC Saturday, Missouri plays at Kentucky. Tigers favored by 10. Two more top 25 games. Number 13, Wisconsin at number 3, Ohio State. Buckeyes favored by 2 touchdowns. And number 8, Notre Dame playing at number 19, Michigan. Wolverines actually favored by a point in that matchup.
Shocking and surprising, Dalton, but we'll see what happens this time next week in college football.
We will. That does it. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. We'll see you next week. Same time, same station.